Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm very excited today to have on Tanya Brown. Tanya Brown is going to share a lot of things that will help you in your life. I've been thinking a lot lately about how do we come back from very, very tragic things. I'm reading a book that my doctor told me about, and my brother told me about, and a teacher friend of mine too. I had about three people say, you got to read this book. So I read about Viktor Frankl in the concentration camps and how he came back and found meaning, even going through horrific suffering. And Tanya's story, what a tragedy she went through to lose her older sister, Nicole Brown Simpson. We've all read about it in the headlines. But she's doing all kind of things to help people now. And you can, as you're listening, look at her website, tanyabrown.net. She now counsels and coaches others and talks about how to come back from tragedy, helps people with many things, domestic violence and many other things. The story's, of course, been in the news again with Dateline, I think, just had a show over the weekend. And a lot of people are kind of, you know, revisiting this tragedy. But the wonderful thing that in revisiting bad things in life is that there are those that come out of it with a victory and turning the tragedy into a triumph, coming through the grief and learning lessons they can share and help others with. So we'll be back in about 20 seconds with Tanya Brown. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome, Tanya Brown. Thank you so much for visiting with us today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on, Richard. I appreciate it.
Well, when I see the pictures of you and your sisters, Nicole, Denise, and the family, you're the cute little kid on the, you know, that looks like the baby of the family. You're the youngest, right?
I am the youngest, and I was always trying to live up to my sisters, like, beauty and brains and... You know, I think of, 30 years later, it kind of all caught up with me, wanting to be just like my sisters. Like, we see so often with our youth today, wanting to be like our sisters, be like our friends, wanting what other people have. And, you know, and here, and I was doing just that as a little girl, wanting to be just like my sisters, instead of really just, I'm Tanya, I'm a dork, I'm trying to find my way through this world, and... You know, and it's funny how life kind of teaches you lessons along the way. But I'll tell you, Richard, that comparison with my sisters and wanting what other people have, all of that stuff, for any parent who's listening out there right now, if you've got children, it's not worth it, because eventually their self-esteem struggles and their confidence gets depleted. And so here I always thought I was living the happy life, but I was always wanting to live somebody else's happy life.
Well, you have your own beauty and brains and ample abundance from God, because you have figured out how to, you know, turn this terrible tragedy into a triumph in that you're helping others. Wow. Tell us whatever you're comfortable telling us with your story, how you came through this. I know you went through the valley of the shadow of death and had, mm-hmm. you talked about having a breakdown that kind of led to this breakthrough. Maybe tell us your story if you can.
Absolutely. You know, I'm big on identifying triggers. You know, things happen to us in our life along the way, no matter what magnitude that lies on. So it could be, you know, your partner stressing you out, to, you know, your job is stressing you out, or maybe there's a divorce or a loss or some sort of trauma there. And if we don't identify the pain along the way and really walk through that tornado of pain, not around it, not to the left, not to the right, or above or below it, but we got to walk through that tornado of chaos, because mm-hmm. later on, we can have a trigger, and that trigger could be a red sonata. It could be a song on the radio. It could be the scent of vanilla. Whatever that is, a trigger 20 years later can ignite something in the brain that can bring that trauma or that pain to the table. And that's what happened to me. So I had numerous losses in my life, starting when I was what, in high school. I think that's really when I started losing a lot of friends of mine in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the 80s, we didn't have a lot of the education with drug awareness and drinking and driving. I think Matt came in the year after I graduated from high school. And so I lost a lot of friends of mine from reckless activities. But, you know, back then we didn't have counselors. Our counselors were, where do you want to go to college after high school? You know, they weren't really there to identify the trauma. Maybe they were there, but the counselors or the district didn't have things in place like we do now after Columbine. So now when we see a trauma or tragedy happen on campus, on any campus, we see first responders, police, fire, therapists, crisis counselors, trauma specialists, right? Back then, we didn't have that. So on Friday, I'd be sitting in my English class. I'd come back Monday, and there would be an empty seat next to me because my friend Larry died over the weekend. So how is a teenager supposed to process that? You know, so here I am, traveling through, you know, life. I had to go through that 6 times in high school. And me coming from World War II parents, pick yourself up by the bootstraps and carry on, you know, that was how I lived out my life. Like, these are the cards I was given. These are the cards I will play out. And I did the best I thought I could, and my parents did the best I could. And but it wasn't until my life, it was 2 years after high school when my best friend Harissa was killed in a hit and run accident in Laguna Beach. And that's when, looking back now with my education and my awareness and my research, that I can diagnose myself as being clinically depressed. And I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I lost interest in all pleasurable activities, everything from watching TV to hanging out with my friends, playing with my dogs. Basically, my life was zapped out of me. And, but I carry, you know, instead of me going to a therapist, even though I was going to school to become a therapist, I didn't actually think that, you know, maybe I should go myself. Sometimes we forget about that. And so I carried that pain with me through college, and my very first day of college, I fainted because I had no coping skills. I was overridden with stress, with chaos, with direction, with guidance. It was like life was slowly but surely taking over me. And it wasn't until I was sitting in a psychology class and we were talking about suicide. And there was a mom and a dad there talking about their daughter who just jumped off the Coronado Bridge in San Diego County. And I related to that girl because that girl, the picture that was up on the wall was the girl who was smiling, lived behind the happy face, was a humanitarian, was sweet. She went out of her way. It's like I related to this girl, except she was an overachiever, and I'm so far not an overachiever. But she, I related to that. And then it was at that moment that I went, you know what? I got to make a lifestyle change. This school isn't for me. I made a decision to slowly. It didn't happen overnight, but I was entertaining the idea that okay, I've got to make a decision to either stay or leave. And Nicole had called me on Christmas Eve when I was pondering this decision. Mm-hmm. And she said, Tanya, I want you to write something down. She said, delete the need to understand everything. We don't need to understand. Yeah, we don't need to understand everything. Some things just are. And I was like, you know what, that was what, almost 30 years ago, maybe 26 years ago or something. And I tell you, Richard, I share that quote with everybody, with every presentation I give, no matter what the talk is on, because it makes sense. We drive ourselves crazy trying to figure out why things are happening to me, why this, you know, why did this happen to me? And some things just are. Sometimes there's no answer for it. And but that just stayed with me. So all that loss, all that pain, all that trauma was catching up with me. But it didn't. And you think it would all kind of come out when Nicole was murdered. But that didn't even come out then. it came out 11 years ago when my wedding was canceled 4 days before.
Hmm. I wonder
so
if that wedding, Tanya, do you think that wedding kind of, you mentioned the word trigger, do you think that what happened there was almost mingled with the other loss of Nicole and all these other past losses of friends, and it was like a trigger where all the losses swirled together and it finally reached that break point? I mean, you know, it was like connected to all the other losses.
Oh, absolutely. It's all compound. You know, if we don't face the trauma and the tragedy and the grief and the anguish, whatever it is on any level, as it shows up in our life, it gets compounded, one on top of another until it's ready to be released. And that can come out in a suicide attempt, like what happened to me 11 years ago. It can come out in domestic violence. It can come out in substance addiction. It can come out in gambling or sex. It can come out in a wide variety of dysfunctional behaviors. So it's very, very important to face our stuff, no matter what it is, no matter how little you may think it is, to face it as it shows up, because I didn't, and it caught up with me in a really big way. Next thing you know, I had Klonopin in a bottle, a full bottle of Klonopin in my left hand, and a bottle of red wine in the other, and I was ready to call it a day. I was basically ready to call it a life. I was done. I was tired. I was exhausted. I had disappointments. I had bad relationships. I had everything in life was a struggle, and it still kind of is, except now I have tools in my toolbox that, you know, I've learned that things just happen along the way in life, and there are certain things that you can take responsibility for, and some things just are, you know. And but just imagine, for people who don't have tools in their toolbox, what do they reach into to get themselves out of, you know, being locked up inside a house? You know, if you don't have a key or a keyhole, you don't know what tool to use to get outside of you being locked in.
Mm.
You know, we get so trapped in our lives that it's so critical for us to really learn what coping skills are. And we're not taught that in school. Kids aren't taught life skills. We're not taught to, you know what, a simple exercise anytime that somebody's getting under your skin. You just breathe, you count to five. You know, that something like that can decrease the anxiety level. Today, we are all high-strung. Nobody acknowledges anybody anymore. Everybody plays the blame game. It's your fault. This is why this happened. Instead of, you know, everybody's so wired so tightly, and it's like I'm just waiting for things to explode. And it's really, I think people really need to disengage from technology a few moments out of the day. I think we need to take time to connect with one another, with our families, our loved ones, and our spirit and ourselves, instead of staying constantly connected with technology. You know, there's very little love in the world, and it really breaks my heart that there's very little respect, very little love, and I think we need to start giving people some hugs and acknowledging more people. And I think the more people that are acknowledged and lifted up, the less depression we'll see, the less anxiety we'll see, suicide. People commit acts of suicide because they're not being heard, or they feel lost or lonely. And maybe if we just take the time to get out of our own way to say, hey, you matter, and who you are makes a difference, then maybe what we can do is save one life a day.
Well, for those of you listening, Tanya Brown is doing a lot to save lives and help people. You can visit her website at tanyabrown.net, and she has some wonderful talks that I've really been enjoying on there, her books. You know, you mentioned this compound effect with the pain, the loss that was kind of stuffed. In your case, the media spotlight was there, so I would imagine that made it even harder to recover, because if you were away living out in the country, you know, and had a loss, you could grieve this, you could pray, you could get through it. But the constant media attention, that would seem to make it very, very hard to recover from this thing, huh?
Absolutely. You know, there was nothing more beautiful yet more traumatizing than grieving with the world. You know, and I get choked up because really it was a beautiful experience knowing how many people wrapped their arms around my family. Mm. And I still get choked up. And, you know, they really wrapped their arms around us and sent us letters from all corners of the world and countries that I never even thought existed. And people really loved on us, and they really were compassionate. And then we got some nasty ones, of course, but, you know, and if, for some reason, those stand out more than the loving ones, but we're over it. But, you know, so on that side, it was a beautiful experience. But yet, when you're talking about your mental health, nothing was more traumatizing. Because when we don't grieve properly, grief can become very complicated. It can become you deny yourself of grieving properly or fully, completely rather. Or you just kind of did what I did in high school, where you just kind of pick up and carry on because somebody died, you got to bury them, and you move on. So it didn't give us a lot of time to really, no, I'm not even going to say that. It didn't give us an opportunity to really face our pain. Victim witness programs was there, but they, you know, my therapist at the time was more interested in the children and the case than he was about my head and my heart. And sadly, and this is really important for anybody who's seeking therapy right now, do not judge one bad therapist. Don't judge all therapists by one bad one. Please do not do that. Because I did that 21 years ago, and I never sought out therapy again. Because I thought all therapists were bad. I had no experience with it. It's really, and it, you know, it's really, really important, you know, and that's why going through my graduate studies for psychology, it was like embedded in us. If the relationship is not good, just because I'm a therapist and you're the client, it may not be a great relationship. And I think a therapist needs to take the responsibility to say, you know what, I feel that I'm not a good fit for you. Let me give you 3 referrals. And I think it's really important for a client and a therapist to really understand that you guys aren't there just for each other. You're there for yourself, too. Like, we get into our professions to how can I be best of service to my client or to my patient? And if you don't recognize that in yourself as a professional, then you're doing your client or your patient a huge disservice. So I really want to stress that with the therapists that are there, as well as people who are seeking therapy. It's very, very important to have a very healthy relationship, because I denied myself of grieving because I based all therapists on that one. And if I would have gotten it in with like a really good therapist, had some good counseling sessions, I probably wouldn't have gone through what I went through 11 years ago. But it happened, and I'm embracing it, because really I firmly believe with every trauma, tragedy, stress, chaos, overwhelm that happens in our life, honestly, it can really benefit you, and we just need to be still long enough to really hear what the lesson is, so then we can teach ourselves so we can help other people. It is easy to fall into that victimization. It is easy. And I could have lived out the rest of my life as a victim. But I chose to get the help. I chose to not walk out the same person that walked into the hospital unit. I knew that I needed to work on my head and my heart. And I did, Richard. I threw my teddy bear. I threw my pencils. I almost hit my therapist. I yelled. I screamed. So that's why I'm able to share my story without anger, without judgment, without pain, without sad tears. Whenever you hear me get choked up, it's because there's joy, but not pain anymore, because I let that pain go 11 years ago. So it's very important for people to really, for all you who are listening, take it from me. If you can walk through that tornado of chaos in your life, walk through it one time, and it may take a while, but walk through it with somebody who loves you, who you can trust, who cares about you, I am telling you, you will have a shining life at the end of all of it. But ultimately, your mental health and well-being has to be your choice. Mm-hmm. It's the hardest thing, but people think that they're so alone in this thing called life, and they're not.
Well, you have definitely a good example of going from not being a victim to being a victor over everything, and those of you listening can get help for the things you're going through at TanyaBrown.net. That you mentioned the tolls and kind of maintaining that the life is challenging. When things re-trigger, you know, in the case of your story, sometimes the media is bringing this all up again, or someone listening that maybe they had a trauma they've done some healing on, but maybe they, you know, they're laying in bed going to sleep and they have a bad memory come back, or you know, maybe they hear a song or they're driving and see a place where somebody hurt them. When how do you deal with the TV, you know, throwing things back in your face in a sense of what happened before, or something that reminds you? What kind of tools do you suggest for us when something's thrown back in our face that hurt us in the past?
One, always know your truth. Always know your truth. Know your feelings. Love your feelings. Acknowledge your feelings. Be authentic. If you hurt, hurt. If you want to cry, cry. If you want to be mad, be mad, but do it healthy. don't be punching walls or anything. But yes, like you said, the FX miniseries right now is on. But to tell you the truth, Richard, like, that was part of my life 21 years ago. And I keep forgetting that it's actually on, funny enough. And but it's, I know the truth. And, you know, people are giving me tidbits of what's happening on the show. And I'm like, that could be farthest from the truth. That is such a lie. You know, this is sensationalism. So I don't allow the sensationalism to get to my heart because I know what the truth is. Mm. And the truth is, my opinion, he did kill my sister. Truth is, he did beat my sister dating back to 1978. I know the truth. But the reason why I'm able to face it and talk about it is because I got mad 11 years ago. I let it out 11 years ago in the psych unit. So I got mad at OJ. I got mad at Nicole. I got mad at Denise and her son and my mom and my dad and my other sister, Dominique. Believe me, I was born with a happy gene, and the happy gene is kind of always my default. But I tell you, that happy gene did not exist while I was in the psych unit. But what always brought me back to that, that brought me back to the homeostasis after getting mad, I would journal. I would journal.
That's a great tool.
Oh, it's awesome. You know, sometimes your therapist isn't always available. Sometimes your friends aren't available. You know, sometimes people just aren't available. So I would just kind of sit in my quiet space and I would journal my feelings down. And now a lot of people have a hard time journaling. You know, don't journal then. Just write down words. Write down single words. Angry, hurtful.
You know, sometimes, Tanya, because I journal as soon as I wake up in the mornings, it's really helped me. And sometimes if I don't know what to write, I'll literally write, I don't know what to write. I don't feel like journaling right now. And as I just start moving the pen all of a sudden, I'll start coming up with, you know, it'll start flowing, you know.
Next thing you know, you got 10 pages.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a very helpful, beautiful tool. People just need to time and learn how to face that pain. I can't go there because I'm not a licensed therapist, but I work with therapists. I work with clients who are in therapy as a coach to help them guide them in between their therapy sessions. So I'm like that transition coach also. And it's really, it's a very valuable tool. So here I would go into my group therapy sessions while I was in the unit, I was an inpatient for 10 days, outpatient for 2.5 months, Monday through Friday. Like, so I did the work. I'm not just, I wasn't there just for a staycation. Like, I did the work. And I wouldn't go to the kitchen and gossip and have fun. Like, I went back to my room, pen to paper, or my little rubber pencil to paper, and I would write. I would reflect. I would self-reflect. You know, I just ran into an incident this morning where it was like I easily could have become the victim of something, but instead I turned it around and said, you know what? The problem isn't all my fault. I will take responsibility for what just happened. But the old Tanya would have ruminated on it. The little hamster in the head would have like just kept going all day long. So instead of the event that just happened, you know, right before we got on the call, instead of me ruminating on that, I just put my hands up in the air and I made a mantra to myself that I take responsibility for my part, but I will not take responsibility or ownership on somebody else's part. And that is just a maturity that I learned 11 years ago. But I didn't, you know, again, we're not taught this stuff in school. So it's like, how do you stop yourself from sinking? You've got to stop, you've got to slow down in life in order to want to help yourself, in order to want to heal yourself. We can't heal ourselves if we're constantly on the phone, text messaging, on Facebook. You know, it's like, we got to slow down, Richard. Our mental health and well-being is the most critical thing we have to live for. Without our mental health and well-being, we are no good for ourselves or those around us. So journaling is a really big one. And you know what I've learned to recognize is that the more you talk about the pain, the more you turn, eventually what ends up happening is that when you share those moments of your loved one or a situation or whatever, the tears turn into a smile because you remember the good times and not the hardship.
That's a real sign of healing, isn't it? When you think about the positive, and I'm sure, you know, that people listening can relate to that because, you know, you shared that wonderful story about Nicole saying delete the need to understand and the memories you have of her. These are the things, you know, you've talked on your site about her as a, you know, loving to entertain and, you know, being a mom and those sort of things. So those positive memories, it's like the light is more powerful than the dark, and it stays with us, all those good, loving moments, don't they?
Yeah, you know, and we have to really, but being happy is a choice. You know, my co-author, William Croyle, wrote a book called I Choose to Be Happy. And he wrote it, he co-authored it with Missy Jenkins. And Missy Jenkins was a victim of a high school shooting. I think it was the first high school shooting years ago, like somewhere in Kentucky. And I don't know the entire story, but I remember reading this. I remember reading her story and her words on forgiveness, and her words on letting go, and her words on acceptance and surrendering to God, to her higher power, whatever that is for your listener. It was such a beautiful example of how you have to make a choice to be happy or not. You can live life being miserable. You can live life being greedy. You can live life being selfish. You can live life in all the ugly areas, or you can be open with your heart, open with your communication, open up with your loving spirit, you know, and choose to be happy. And I mean, that's really a beautiful book, along with mine, you know, Finding Peace Amid the Chaos, My Escape from Depression and Suicide. But I love Missy's book, and if anything, I love the title, I Choose to Be Happy. Now, if this girl, now she's completely paralyzed. She can only move her arms, her upper body. No, she can't even move her upper body. She can only move her arms, I think. And she lives life in forgiveness and happiness. Now, if that girl can do it, we can do it.
Wow. Well, thank you, Tanya, so much for coming on today. And our listeners can keep up with you and read your books, The Seven Characters of Abuse, finding peace amid the chaos. And is TonyaBrown.net the best place for them to connect with you?
Absolutely. And you know what, Richard? I am here for your listeners, your family, your friends. If I can't help you, I will find somebody who can. I don't want people to feel like they're living life alone. So just reach out and know that we all care because we get life. We get it.
Well, thank you, Tonya, for coming on. What a blessing you are, and we're eternally grateful.
Oh, thank you so much, and I appreciate the invitation. I really do, and I'm here. So anytime you want to have a conversation again, I'm available.
Oh, thank you, Tonya. We'd love to have you back on. And thank you to all of you for listening as we've went a few seconds over time. But share this link with people that are going through things. What a wonderful, wonderful visit. God bless you all.